Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today, my guest is Kay Ledson. Kay worked in financial services and senior management positions for most of her working life, so she was ill-prepared for her son Josh's accident June 25, 2000. One thing she did have on her side was that she'd worked through several injuries with Josh over the years through his passion for pushing the envelope with whatever he did. She knew he had a strong mind and had recovered from many broken bones. He was into punishing sports and knew his body really well. What she wasn't prepared for was the lack of support from Josh's medical team. She realized that first night that it was up to her to find the way to get Josh his life back, and she had to do whatever it took to help him. Since arriving in the USA in June 2012, Kay has made it her mission to speak to all who would listen about the options of below injury recovery for those with spinal cord injuries. And in April 2013, she established Warrior Moms to give hope advocacy to families dealing with spinal cord injury. And so I'd like to welcome Kay. Kay, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks, David. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you.
Oh, you are welcome. It's an important story, and I'm glad that you found your way to me, and we're happy to have you here today. Can you tell us what actually happened to Josh? What was the nature of the accident?
Josh was about to become a professional snowboarder. He'd actually received, he was in contract negotiations that weekend, and he was in one of the snowfields in Victoria in Australia. And he'd been a Swiss exchange student, so he had a passion for doing long jumps in the snow. And this day, it was a really sunny day, and the snow was very, very good. And so the boys decided to build a jump that would take them across an asphalt or a tarred road in the resort. And anyway, they built the jump, and it was all signed off. And he did it, and something went wrong. And in the air, while he was trying to minimise the impact, you know, he went through several things, but ultimately he landed on the base of his neck. He wasn't knocked out, and he realised that he'd broken his neck. And then, boys, when they came to him, he got them to pack his neck in ice and make his head stable. And anyway, by the time he was admitted to hospital, he was admitted to hospital as a C5, C6, C7, T1, complete quadriplegic. Basically, he was a head and a brain. And he had in those early days, we were told he had less than 3% chance of any recovery if, in fact, he lived.
Wow. Wow, that must have been such a trauma for Josh and for you. What was your initial reaction to that?
Well, when we first heard he'd had an accident, we didn't know what had happened. No one told us he'd broken his neck. My first reaction was, is he conscious? Yes. Does he know where he is? Mm-hmm. Yes. And I made a comment at the time saying, well, at least we have something to work with. And I had no idea at that stage why I made that comment. It was several hours later when he was flown off the mountain in a helicopter, and it was several hours later when we were finally told the prognosis. And basically we were told that he would never get out of bed again, that his spinal cord was so badly crushed. And I just said, you know what, you don't know my son and you don't know me, and my son's going to walk again. And after probably several minutes of arguing with the doctors, and I guess every parent does it, it's just that terrible, it's sickening, and you wish that you were dreaming and you want to wake up. And I know that my heart broke, but I knew my son, and I said, my son's going to walk. And they just said that, you know, they felt sorry for Josh because of mothers like me. And, you know, I just knew him. And the thing about it is that I have never, ever pushed Josh. What Josh and I have worked with his recovery from day one, and I've just been able to finance it and encourage him and also mentor him and coach him and, you know, kick him in the backside when he goes off track. But it was never my goal, my personal goal, for him to walk. It had to be his goals. And so I just supported mm-hmm. him with his goal setting.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. It sounds like he and you both had incredible faith. And where does that faith come from for both of you?
Well, I think, you know, our faith, obviously we're both very spiritual people. I was given messages the night, and I have to be careful now because we have text messages. In those days we didn't. But I definitely received messages from the universe that night before we knew what had happened to Josh. I was sitting in mm-hmm. a private waiting room with my sister and his father and his wife. And I started to get these messages, and it was like someone was standing next to me with a lump of wood screaming these messages into my brain. And there were three messages. The first message is that we have to massage his fingertips and his toe tips and his feet and his hands. And that was like really real. It was just massage, blah, blah, blah. And then it was, there are people around that can help you and never give up. And I remember at the time, they were just repetitive messages hitting my brain. And I said to my sister, I think I'm going mad. I'm getting these messages. And then when we were told what had happened to Josh, I said, we have to massage his fingertips and his toe tips. And the doctor said to me, you're wasting your time. I said, well, he's injured. He's not disabled. And we've dealt with injuries before. And I just remembered the messages. And the messages are as clear to me now, nearly 14 years later, as what they were then. And then that night when I went home, I was just devastated. I was exhausted. And I sat on my bed and I screamed, if there is a God, I need those names now. And instantly, it was like someone went whoosh and gave me the names of what became my base team. And, you know, and then about 3 days later, I had a dream that Josh would walk within 2 years, and he actually discarded his wheelchair 2 years after his accident, but he actually walked out of hospital 4.5 months after his injury. But the interesting thing is his spinal cord's never recovered. The only improvement in his spinal cord has been the swelling. He still presents as a complete quadriplegic 14 years later. So it's been kind of an amazing journey for us both.
How is it possible for somebody that presents as a complete quadriplegic to be able to walk? Is there any medical explanation for that?
No. The medical Josh's doctors basically don't want to talk to us. I knew the night of the accident that the doctors would mend him, but they wouldn't heal him. All they were about was us accepting that this was it. And so it was interesting because Josh is really clued into his body. And what happened was on the Wednesday night after the accident, so the accident was on Sunday, on the Wednesday night after the accident, he basically had a major operation where they took all the fragments of the shattered vertebrae out of his spinal cord, and then they rebuilt C6, C7, C6, C7, T1 vertebrae. And that, so he couldn't feel anything. Anyway, that morning when I went in to see him, he was like devastated because the doctors had told him what had happened to him. We'd kept it a secret from him. He thought that they'll fix his vertebrae and he'll walk out of hospital. We did not tell him that his cord was crushed. So his initial reaction when he saw me was, I want you to kill me. Help me die. I can't live like this. Mum, I can't do this. You know, I'm the kid that always looks out the window. And I just said to Josh, there were several incidences from when he had the operation, or from when he had the accident, when he had the operation, that he could have died, and he made choices. And at one stage, he actually felt his body shutting down, and he made a choice to live. So I used that and said, look, Dale, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know you're going to walk. I absolutely know that. And I did. I never had any doubt. So one thing he then said was, well, you know, they've done something to my right leg. And I said, what do you mean? And see, what they do is when they rebuild the vertebrae, they take bone off the hip. And in Josh's case, they took bone off his right hip. And he said, they've done something to my leg. And I said, mate, you can't feel anything, so don't stress about it. He goes, listen to me. They've taken something out of my right leg and it's empty. Anyway, fast forward 12 years, we're in Bali and we've used a lot of alternative therapy on Josh and it's always ongoing. And we were introduced to this shaman who was actually Indonesian, but he'd been trained in South America and he knew nothing about us or Josh or anything. And the first thing he said to us in Indonesian was, I don't know what's wrong with this man, but his body is of broken crystal shards. And that's all the neurogenic pain he could see, because Josh has got new nerves growing all the time, but there's nowhere for them to go. So he has chronic neurogenic pain. And the second thing he did was he got Josh to walk, and he said, this man had an operation on his right leg. The doctor did not reattach the hip flexor muscle. And so it took us 12 years to find out that the doctor made a decision about my son that he would never walk again, so he didn't reattach the hip flexor muscle properly. But Josh knew that the morning after his operation when he had no feeling. So Josh is really in tune with the real spiritual side of his body.
I would say so. Now, what was done to correct that situation with the right leg?
Can't really do anything. It's just really therapy. I mean, it was 12 years ago, and we know now that is an issue. And so when he has kinesiology, for instance, or we do a lot of cranial sacral therapy, there's a really good cranial sacral therapist in Carlsbad or Encinitas in Southern California, so that when Josh is back in the States, he goes to her a lot. And it really is just about reconnecting those pathways. And that's really, I think, mainly where Josh is now, it's more of a neurological issue than anything else, because, as I said to you earlier, my son only has 5% cord function at C6, C7, which is just below the neck, but yet he walks, he snowboards, he rides motorbikes. He actually just did a long jump on a motorbike recently. He drives an unmodified car. He uses normal gym equipment, and yet he's only got 5% cord function. And we think he's just, his cord doesn't do anything anymore in that area. We think he's just retrained, or he's trained his neuropathways to come in from different sources now. I mean, we're not medical people. We've never to this day researched spinal cord injury. So we really don't know anything about it.
I'm amazed that the medical people didn't want to know what it was that you did that helped bring about this result. It just boggles my mind. You know, I mean, if they insist that this kind of injury is going to result in a crippling condition, how can they be so blind to the possibilities that are out there? And let's talk a little bit about the alternative therapies that you used. I know that you used many, and I was very interested to hear in how actual names came to you of people that you should use.
Okay, so that night when I screamed to God, I got the names of a really good friend of mine who's a psychic healer, and she understood crystals. Mm-hmm. So she was obviously, I'd rung her the day of the accident, and I've told her that Josh had had an accident, and she came straight to my house, and she said, he's changed his destiny, this was never meant to happen. And then she said something really funny. She said, it's like you and Josh have served an apprenticeship because of all of the alternative healing we've done in the past with Josh's injuries. It's like you've been set up for this injury to be cured. And so she came into my mind. Some friends of mine that were based in the U.S., they became my eyes and ears in the U.S., and we sent Josh's MRIs to them, and they went to a major American spinal hospital. And the interesting thing is that those doctors agreed with the Australian doctor's prognosis that Josh had less than 3% chance of any recovery. That didn't stop us because we kind of thought 3% good odds and he should have died. And then the third person was our chiropractor. Josh had been under a chiropractor for 2 years with an earlier L5 injury that he'd got from snowboarding. And so he had worked with our chiropractor, Simon Floriani, for nearly 2 years. And so the morning after the accident, I went to Simon's practice at 6 o'clock in the morning, told Simon what had happened, and Simon said, well, we need to get his MRIs. We need to know what we're dealing with. So that ended up in a whole other ball game for me because I then couldn't get Josh's MRIs because of freedom of information and Josh's privacy, because Josh was 18 and a half and I didn't have a medical power of attorney. And so that just set off a whole new set of worries that I didn't need at the stage. But anyway, we managed to get it all. And then what we figured out was that Josh was injured in one part of his body, which was that whole C5, C6 through to T1, but the rest of his body was fine. And he had a lot of cuts and bruises and everything. So what we rationalised was that we had to get the energy flowing properly in the body. And obviously we started massaging his fingertips and his toe tips the day one. And I would talk to everybody that went into visit Josh before they went in, and I said, you've got to be positive. You've got to know that he's going to walk again. You're not to tell him that his spinal cord's crushed, because if you do that, he'll give up. You're also not to cry, and you've got to massage his fingertips and his toe tips, because that's us helping him get his life back. And then along the way, so that was my core group. Simon, Josh's chiropractor, came into the hospital on the Sunday, which was a week after his accident. He wasn't allowed to come in as Josh's chiropractor, so I introduced him as Josh's snowboard coach. And then the rest of the people we brought in at night, and what we did was we set up a...
Are you still there, Kay? Well, apparently we've lost Kay, and I trust that she will be calling back.
Pardon?
Oh, there you are. You were cutting out.
Oh, sorry. So we brought in someone to realign his chakras. So the whole methodology was always to keep the energy flowing through his body. And even though he couldn't do anything, we did it for him. Then he was taught visualization and meditation, and that allowed him to get off the drugs. And then he started an exercise regime where he would visualize exercising his big toe by blinking his eyelids and attaching an imaginary spider web to his big toe. And then one day his big toe started working, and so that was the beginning, you know. It's been an amazing journey.
Wow. Oh, I can only imagine. That sounds amazing. Now, how did you know about all of these different therapies and that they might be helpful?
Well, we didn't really. I mean, it was my initial was talking to Simon, our chiropractor, because he believes in the integration of the spirit and healing, and also my best friend who was a psychic healer. So she would meditate and get answers. Really, she would meditate every day, and she got the answer about teaching in visualization and teaching in meditation. We then found a really good reflexologist, and she came in. And then we found a lady that was an acupuncturist, and she was trained in the Beijing Spinal Hospital in China. And so slowly but surely, we built our team. And then we go to Bali a lot, and we have a lot of Balinese friends, and they're always looking for new people as well. And then Josh has recently gone through a rebirthing exercise, which was very, very powerful to him and made him understand that really you've got to understand when the first injury occurs, and Josh's injury to his cord wasn't his first injury. So it's a lot of a mind game now, you know, it really is.
Well, it sounds like Josh has a very strong mind. Would you say that's his greatest strength?
I think it is. I mean, you know, we've had our dark days. I mean, it's not been an easy ride. We've just recently written his book, Relentless, Walking Against All Odds. And one of the things was he hated his wheelchair. And so, but he knew he had to use his wheelchair. So he set a series of goals fourth morning after the accident, you know, and one was to transfer from his, well, one was to sit up, because at that stage he couldn't even sit up. And then the next one was transferring into a wheelchair, and then to stand, and then to be able to stand unaided, and then stand on different surfaces, and then obviously to walk and to snowboard and to ride his motorbike. His last goal of all, which he's still working towards, is to be able to walk down the street with his friends without them having to wait for him. But, you know, that along the way, he's just had this amazing strength. But we wrote the book because people look at Josh and I and they don't understand our journey. And people look at Josh and go, well, we want to be like Josh. Well, you can be like Josh, but you've got to understand that it is every day, unrelentlessly working, training, your mind games that he has to play every day. Like, his cord has never recovered. And so he still gets messages that his legs could be around his neck, but he knows his legs are where they should be. But that's this cruelty of this injury. And the other thing is that every spinal cord injury is different. And there is no one injury is the same. So as Josh says, it's the loneliest injury you'll ever have. And, you know, for Josh, he's really been a pioneer because we didn't do anything with recovery in the normal sense of the word. We didn't, after Josh was discharged from rehab, which was really about getting him used to life in a wheelchair, everything we did was totally, you know, unorthodox, and so therefore we didn't really hang out in that spinal cord injury theatre. But now, of course, we're both very much involved with it. But people reading his book, they do get a sense of this is not an easy road to travel, you know. And we've had such fabulous feedback from parents and from loved ones and from people going through the injury. So it was a book that had to be written.
Now, where is the book available for sale?
Well, if people order it through our website for Australia, any orders are done through Australia, we personally sign and we can make a message in the book. For books ordered outside of Australia, the easiest way for them to get them is through Amazon.com, and it's just Relentless, Walking Against All Odds. And it's also available as a ebook as well, or a Kindle. I know that you can get the book electronically as well. I mean, but any orders through Australia can be ordered through our website, www.joshwood.com.au.
Is that wood, like wood on a tree?
Yeah, wood, W-O-O-D.
Okay.
Josh Wood.
Great. I'm going to have you repeat those again at the end of the show.
Yeah. Anyone who wants to order the book except in Australia, can get it through Amazon.
Wow. Well, this might seem like an inane question at this point after what you've shared with me, but how did you know that this alternative therapy might work?
I was desperate. I knew the night of the accident that the doctors were going to fix my son, but they weren't going to mend him. And they, even as early as while they're counseling us, they're saying, look, he'll never get out of bed, blah, 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 blah. So you just hit with this really bad news. And I just knew there had to be another way. And I, as I said, I was fortunate that we had gone through a series of injuries that Josh had had in the past, and we'd used alternative therapists. And, excuse me, we had a really good, I had a good network of people that I trusted. You know, and I know it was pretty trippy what we did, and we were trying to explain to people, like you can imagine, you know, nearly 14 years ago, we're trying to explain to people what we were doing, and they were looking at us in horror. And I remember my own mum saying to me, do you know what you're doing? When I told them I was bringing Simon in, do you know what you're doing? And I went, Mum, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm not going to let my son stay in bed for the rest of his life. And you know, so we just had faith. And seriously, we've hit rock bottom so many times because this injury is such a challenging, cruel injury. You know, Josh nearly died in 2012 in front of me. And that was horrific because we'd never had any real health problems with Josh. That's a whole other thing that usually when you're a quadriplegic, you spend a lot of time in hospital. Josh has been in hospital in 14 years, probably six times. But in 2012, he just was going through a really bad period health-wise, and he had this massive seizure in front of me. Now, if he'd been in the car or if he'd been on his own, the doctors told us he would have died. Having said that, he nearly died in front of me. And that was a really tough time for both of us. But, you know, we've worked through it, and a lot of help came from a lady that we met in Encinitas, the craniosacral therapist, and she was just amazing because fortunately, just after Josh's seizure, he went to the States for 4 months therapy in gait training to improve his gait, walking gait, and we were introduced to a lady in Encinitas, and she's been fantastic, and she really helped Josh with his issues around the seizure, and he hasn't had any problems since.
Wow.
So we've always had someone, like when we've been at rock bottom, someone's always come through. It's been amazing.
It sounds like an amazing journey, as you say. I just can't conceive of what that must have been like for the two of you. Well, would you say that this
really
has been a spirit
along the way? Pardon?
Support is so important. You know, it's when people are going through a challenge, without support, you know, you're out on your own, and we need to be there for each other. So, I'm glad that you had that, but it sounds like you had to advocate for whatever it was that was needed to get Josh better. And thank God he has a mom like you.
Well, I think the biggest challenge you have is the hospital. Like, you know, we had a couple of incidences early in the piece that, and I always say to parents when I'm talking to them, now you must stay with your child in hospital, your loved one, because there's this mind game that they play, and it's really about acceptance of the chair. And so one of the things that I always used to say to the nursing staff and the doctors is, don't tell us what we can't do. We already figured that out. Tell us what we can do. And if you can't tell us what we can do, don't talk to us then, unless it's life-threatening. And then never talk to him about being disabled. He is injured. And also just things like, and again, you've got to go back 14 years. 14 years ago, people in wheelchairs wore sweats. They wore, like, probably slippers. And that's what we were told Josh had to wear. And we went, why? He wears track shoes. You know, he wears designer designer clothes. He doesn't wear sweats. And so we had to get over that mindset with the hospital that Josh could wear whatever he liked. And Josh would always wear the normal clothes he wore before the accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'd do things like putting the wheelchair next to the bed when he got up in the morning. That was the first thing he saw. And he would push the wheelchair out of the way because he didn't want to see the wheelchair first thing in the morning, because he didn't want to be defined by the wheelchair. And so, you know, you've just got to, with the hospital, they were glad to see the back of us. They really were. But really, we've offered the olive branch to the hospital several times and said, why don't you work with us? Why don't you ask what we've done? Because you didn't get it wrong. You didn't misdiagnose him. So why don't you work with us now to find out what we did? But it falls on deaf ears, sadly.
Well, that is very sad. What was their reaction to your telling them how things were going to be?
Oh, they didn't like it. The other thing I did was I brought all his snowboard gear into ICU and his motorbike gear in, because I wanted him to know that I believed he could get his life back. Now, we had a huge battle with the medical team on that, and I said, I don't really care. You know, all I want to do is know that my son know that he can get his life back. So if he can, and he says, now, I could smell the dirt on my motorbike gear, and that's what drove me to get better. You know, I could see my snowboard gear because I knew I'd be able to snowboard again. And it is, look, I'm not saying it works for everybody. We just tell our story and we just say, this is what worked for us. And I can't say it's going to work for somebody else. But you know yourself, if you have a goal, it's like an Olympian training to be a gold medalist. You have a goal, you do whatever it takes to achieve that goal. Well, our goal was for Josh to get his life back. So our goal was to do whatever it took. And along the way, you know, I've spent probably nearly $2 million on getting him right. That was fortunate that I was in a position I could do that. I couldn't do it now, but when I needed to have the money always came. You know, I had a very unique business that paid me very well while I needed it. Now, you know, I'm struggling financially, but I know that I will be able to manage because I have faith that I will be looked after and Josh will be looked after.
I think that's a key thing that you just said. The one thing that I've come to realize is that God always takes care of our needs each step of the way, and that faith is absolutely essential so that people don't get stuck in a place where it's poor me or getting to become a victim, because there's always possibilities out there for everybody. And, you know, if people can look back at challenging times in their lives and see how they have managed to survive them and come through to a place where they're thriving, they'll realize that God has taken care of their needs, even though they may not have seen that at the time. So that was a very fortunate blessing that you had the resources to do that. And what would you say to somebody who's in a position that doesn't have those resources, that is facing a similar situation to what you and Josh faced?
Well, I think in the early days, I didn't have those resources. I had a business that I'd set up. I actually had two businesses, one that had been going for 3 years, and that was my primary source of income, and in a business that I'd set up with my sister. I realized very quickly that I had to just throw everything in. Josh's father was absolutely no support to us, financially or emotionally or at any level, and so I knew I had to do it myself. So in those early days, in that first 12 months, the Australian hospital system is a bit different from America. As a citizen of Australia, we are guaranteed hospital care if something like this happens. So it wasn't an issue while Josh was in hospital, but all of the alternative stuff I paid for, and obviously things like making sure he had nourishing food. Josh couldn't eat the food in the hospital. You would not give it to a dog. Even the nurses said to us, the food here is terrible. So we used to take nourishing food into him all the time. And so I didn't really work for 4 months. So I ended up at the end of 12 months, I had something like $70,000 on credit cards. I'd used all my savings. And I just, by the end of the 12 months, I was broke. And but anyway, I had a unique talent, and I was able to utilize that for about the next 10 years. And we lived very well. Probably 3 years into it, you know, I was able to pay off my debt and we bought a house. And it was funny because at the time, I look back on it now and I think at the time I needed that money, it was there. And then just recently, I've had it all taken away from me, and I was going to walk away from anything to do with spinal cord injury recovery and helping other people, because I've just spent every last cent the last 2 years I've been in America to stay there. And unfortunately, I've come home with less money than I had when I was 18 because I just couldn't afford to keep fighting the system anymore. And I was angry and I went, you know, why have you done this to me? Why? Mm. And I live in a bedroom at my sister's house. I don't have a car. And But I was talking to Simon yesterday, our chiropractor, who's like a brother to me, and he said, you've just been given this amazing gift. And I said, I have. My son and I, the knowledge we have about this injury is phenomenal. And so I said to Simon, I can't waste the gift. And obviously something is going to happen because I have faith that God hasn't given us this gift and this knowledge and this understanding for nothing. And if he has, then there's a real irony to that. But I don't believe he has. And we've just got to find that niche. And I tell you, I've got every reason to be suffering from depression at the moment. I've got every reason to be really angry with the world. But I'm not, because I believe that we've been given this gift for a reason. And sometime in the next few months, that reason's going to be apparent. I don't know when, but it will be apparent, I'm sure. And we'll be okay. My son lives
Tell me.
On 200... Hmm? Sorry?
No, go ahead.
No, my son lives on about $250 a week at the moment. We're trying to get his public speaking up and running, and which Josh was at a chiropractic conference on the weekend, and people were just amazed at his recovery. And I know that with the book and with the public speaking, we're going to be okay. It's just we've had to go to rock bottom. Again, I guess you just appreciate your gains and you appreciate life more, you know?
Sure.
We're alive.
Sure.
I mean, that's one thing. I think we're alive and we're healthy, and so that's everything. So if someone's going through the same thing at the moment, I can tell you now there's always someone worse off. And so you need to appreciate. Josh actually says we need to appreciate what we have in life, because when I had my spinal cord injury, all I wanted was my old life back, and yet I will spend the rest of my life trying to get my old life back. So appreciate what you have in life. And I think too quickly our society has been developed to say we need more, we need better, we need bigger. But no one ever sits back and says, oh, my God, I have a good life. And when you get a spinal cord injury, I can absolutely tell you, everybody that's involved with it says, I just want my old life back. And yet how often do we not appreciate our lives? You know, it's always, this is not good enough, that's not right. Sorry?
You hit on a key point right there, and that is gratitude. You know, Oprah Winfrey really was big on gratitude and encouraging people to keep gratitude journals. And Esther Hicks, who I don't know if you're familiar with her, she channels an entity called Abraham. And she talks about the art of allowing and how important it is to appreciate where you're at right now. You can send forth rockets of desire, but it's important not to focus on what you don't have, but to appreciate what you do have. And that there's just this law in the universe that when you send forth these rockets of desire, as long as you don't stay stuck in a victim mode where the things that you hope to manifest come into play. So I'd like to explore your faith journey a little bit, because it sure sounds like you and Josh have got strong faith. Now, where did that come from for you?
Well, I guess, you know, I like had the traditional religious instruction upbringing as a child through the Anglican faith. But I've traveled a lot in mm-hmm. Asia, and I really love Buddhism, and I love the Hindu faith. And so if you ask me where my faith is today, it is that there is a higher power. What his name is or mm-hmm. her name is, who knows, but there is a higher power. And look, we've had angelic experiences with Josh. We don't talk about it in the book because we don't want people to think, oh, it's a miracle. You could argue that it was a miracle that all these people were brought into our lives. You could argue that it was a miracle that I was the type of mother that would do anything for my son, and that I had faith in me and had faith in my friends that were healers. So you could argue that's a miracle. I think it's a whole combination of things. But, I mean, I remember one night Josh was having a session with the woman who was doing his chakra massage and alignment, and he said, "Grandpa's here." And his grandfather had been dead for about 14 years. And I said, "So how is he?" He said, "He's happy." And right in the beginning, when Josh was falling out of the sky, just before he landed, the voice came to him and said, "You'll be okay, just relax." And he knows that was his grandfather. So we know that his grandfather was there with him when he hit the road. And then when we had this experience where he saw his grandfather in the hospital room, he said, "Oh, the others are here." And I said, "Who are the others?" And he described my ex-husband's parents absolutely to a T, and he'd never seen photos or anything of them, but they were in the room with us. I mean, I didn't see them, but you could feel the energy in the room. It was really powerful. I mean, look, I think, so I do think there is a higher self. I don't know what their name is. I pray. It's been years since I've been to a formal church service. Obviously, you know, I've been to services for various reasons, but I try, but it's really hard to explain, but I do believe there is a higher self. And I think that if we hadn't been open to it, and at the times when it's been really tough, we've been helped. So that's probably the easiest way I can explain it.
Okay. Well, you know, religion is just a pathway to spirituality, but it does not equal spirituality. And I think it's how we live our lives and the ways that we are congruent with our values and the way that we treat each other. That's the spiritual approach, and having that faith that all is well, that everything happens for a reason. I think that is so important in terms of maintaining sanity, you know, when you're going through situations such as you were going through. And I heard you talking about how you believed everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, well, the other thing I think for me is that, like, we borrowed money to get Josh's book published, and I've got a lot of people that say, well, you know, you've got to always sell the book and you've got to make a profit. I mean, that's business. But we've given away a lot of the books. Like, I had a woman recently in America that I was talking, she asked me why I was there. And I said, well, I'm here to do a radio. I was doing a radio advertisement, an ad. And I said, I'm doing a radio ad. And she said, no, but why are you here? And I told her, I gave her the 2-minute snapshot of Josh's story. And she started to cry. And I said, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't mean to upset you. She said, 11 years ago, my brother died of a spinal cord injury. And it was just horrific, and my mother never recovered. And I said, so how many children did your mother have? Had 5 children. And was she on her own? Yes. I said, your brother had to die. Your mother would never have been able to raise your children and deal 11 years ago with a horrific spinal cord injury. It would have been a living death for your mother, but it would have killed her. because she wouldn't have been able to put the time into you and your other siblings. And I always said I was lucky I didn't have a husband to worry about or any other children. I just focused on Josh. So the woman said, you know, Mum's never gotten over it. And I said, hang on a minute. And that day, for some reason, I'd thrown some of Josh's books in the car and I went downstairs and got the book. And at that stage, I have to say, I was pretty angry about what had happened in America because I love America and I should be in America. I'm a put my hand on my heart when I do your pledge. And, you know, I wanted to be there and I was angry. Anyway, I gave her the book and I signed it to her mother. I signed it to her mother and I wrote Kay, the warrior man. And I knew that's what I had to do. It was really very powerful.
That's beautiful.
So,
that's beautiful.
Whether I like it or not, I'm the warrior mum. And I have to help people because I can make a difference and so can Josh. When we're talking to a family going through what we went through, we can actually say, look, it does get better, but you've got to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to work at it and you've got to do a whole bunch of things, but it does get better. And that's a really powerful message to give a family. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have got upset.
Well, let's talk about warrior moms. Can you tell us about warrior moms?
Yeah, I was flying to Missoula in Montana to meet a woman that I had become friends with. She was a nurse. And her son had had a horrific spinal cord injury. He was paraplegic, and she contacted me, and, of course, everything I told her was going against all of her medical knowledge, and it didn't make sense to her. But I started mentoring her, and then over a period of time, she became a believer, and I decided that I would go to Missoula. She lives in Missoula, Montana, and visit her. And I was flying across the mountains, I guess it's the Rockies, I suppose, in a little plane to go to Missoula. And I was thinking, you know, we've got to start helping these families and we've got to start building this network. And then it just came to me, warrior mums. We're warrior mums because we're fighting for our kids and we're fighting for their lives. And it's the hardest battle of all. And so I said to Michelle when I got to Missoula, you know, I want to set up warrior mums and I want you to be one of my mums because you're the medical side of it. And you kind of walk the two paths, which is really cool. And let me tell you, it's not easy because it's such a tragic injury. And to be a warrior mum, you have to deal with a lot of tragedy, but you also deal with a lot of hope. And I have another warrior mum, Jeannie Picard. Her and her husband set up Project Walk in Atlanta, Georgia, after their son had a similar accident, a car accident to Josh. He has a similar injury to Josh, Chris. And they have set up this amazing place, Project Walk in Atlanta. And so I was on my journey. I was going to Missoula and Atlanta, and I spoke to Jeannie about being my other warrior mum. And so the three of us are there. And I've just recently met another lady in California, Tammy. And I said to her, I want you as one of my warrior mums too. And there's a whole bunch of warrior mums that are on Facebook, on the Facebook page, Warrior Mums. And I do a blog radio program myself where I interview people like Cutting Edge Stem Cell. I just recently interviewed Ryman Reed, who's the advocate for stem cell in America. Eric Harness, who is an advocate for blow injury recovery and a researcher in that area. And I interview a lot of different people, but the message is, you know, it's a great way of getting information out to people. So I always post the interviews on my Facebook pages and people share them and it's fantastic. You know, Christmas Eve, a young man, Noah, had a horrific spinal cord injury at Christmas Eve, and he's from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and one of my mums, who was a young woman, Erica, with a spinal cord injury, because she lived in Fort Wayne, she reached out to the family, and we were able to, you know, you see it all unfold on Facebook, and it's horrific and scary and frightening, and we're able to reach out to the family and say, just hang in there, it will get better. and don't listen to the doctors. The doctors will make your son medically safe and sound, and I'm not criticising doctors. Doctors are amazing at that. It's what's the after bit that doesn't work right. And then, you know, I fortunately, when I went to Atlanta to meet with Jeannie on my warrior mum's journey, I was able to meet with Noah and his family, and that was just so cool because so often we never meet with people. And, you know, his mum, Sandy, has become one of our best Warrior Mum advocates, and if she hears news, she posts things on the Warrior Mums Network, and we're a small group, but by gee, we make a difference, you know, and it's very cool. I mean, we don't charge, no one charges any money, you just do it. I mean, I have to make money just to live, and so ultimately, I guess, we'll get speaking opportunities and more advertising on the radio program. But, you know, I don't do it for the money, but I can't do it for nothing. You know, so it's this constant dilemma that we have.
Right, right.
But Warrior
right.
Mums is awesome. I'm so proud of them.
Now, we should make it clear that Mums is spelled differently, right?
M-O-M-Z.
How do you spell Mums?
It's Warrior.
Okay,
and
Z like zebra.
M-O-M-Z. Warrior
okay.
Mums, M-O-M-Z.
And if somebody puts that in on Facebook, it will bring the page up?
Yep. There's two Warrior Mums sites. One was one that I set up originally, and it's still there, and we often have people posting on that. And then there's the other Warrior Mums site that really is the one that I'm posting things on all the time. And the other site they can pick up on Facebook is Relentless Walking Against All Odds, and that's Josh's book site. And then people can just get me as Kay Ledson, K-A-Y, and then L-E-D-S-O-N.
Is that the best way for them to get in touch with you, Kay?
Yeah. The thing
through
is,
Facebook?
Social media is fantastic. Can I just say, social media is amazing because it's such a positive way to reach out to masses of people. And, you know, when 14 years ago when Josh had his accident, we just had email, and that was it. And yet now with social media, everything's instant, everything's positive, and, you know, Josh uses Instagram a lot. And, you know, his way of dealing with social media is slightly different from mine, but between us, we managed to get to a lot of people.
That's great. Is there anything else that you would like to share about this experience that might be helpful to other people or that you just want to get off your chest?
I think one of the problems is that, and this is a really delicate issue, is that when your child or your loved one has this horrific injury, you can't make them get better. You know, all you can do is put things in their place to help them get better. And I remember, like, the night of Josh's accident, and I said to the doctors, you have no idea how strong my son's mind is, and how dare you say that he's not going to recover at all. He's an athlete. The problem was that then the doctor said, you know, we feel sorry for your son because a mother's like you. Well, you know what, mothers like me, I've never once pushed Josh. Josh and I have had so many come-to-God moments over the last 14 years over, you know, him not, you know, when I was spending the money, I expected him to train. And so he would go to the local gym and train. But there were days that he wouldn't get out of bed and then he would be angry with me. And I'd say, well, you know, okay, let's just stop it then. I'll just stop spending all this money if you're not going to be committed. It's up to you. You don't have to do this. And, you know, I often have parents say to me, my son or my daughter's so close to walking, but they just have given up. Well, to be really honest with you, and I cop a lot of criticism for saying this, oftentimes life is easier in the wheelchair because they can move faster. People see they're in a wheelchair, and obviously there's a whole bunch of things occur to you when you're in a wheelchair, like people talk loud to you because they think there's something wrong with your hearing, or they talk to the person that you're with rather than you because they think that there's something wrong with you in a mental challenge as well as a physical challenge. So there are those issues that people deal with in wheelchairs. But at the end of the day, if you're talking about mobility, you're a lot better off in a wheelchair. You know, Josh has to look at every surface he's walking on. He can't walk on sand. When he got married on a beach in Melbourne, and the photographer said, I want you to walk 500 yards up the beach to this spot. And Josh has turned around and said, these aren't all terrain legs. These legs are here to walk a few steps, not on the beach, because Josh hates walking on sand because it's such an unstable surface. So, you know, I just guess you can't make your children or your loved one recover. It has to come from them. And so all you can do is put everything in their space for that to happen. Now, the interesting thing is when Josh's doctors, one of Josh's doctors in particular, has been asked, why did Josh recover? He says, because his mother was determined and so was he. Now, that is just a load of BS, really. I mean, yes, determination's got something to do with it, but that's not enough to dismiss what my son's done medically because we're both determined. There's a lot of determined people that never get recovery because it's not their karma or it's not their ability. And as I said, Josh is a bittersweet. People look at Josh and go, well, if I work really hard, I can be like Josh. Well, I don't know that they can be or I don't know that they can't be, but I do know that it's hard. And, you know, also 14 years we've been doing this and he still exercises every day and watches his diet and he's on additives to help him, you know. And so that's all part of the commitment he has to his ongoing ability to live his life the way he wants to live it. So I think from a parent's point of view or a loved one's point of view, as much as you love that person that has this horrific injury, all you can do is be their coach, their mentor, their, you know, their sidekick. You can't make them do it. And if they don't want to do it, then that's okay. Now, because I spoke to a young girl last year or the year before. Her sister had an injury, and she was talking to me about maybe getting Josh to mentor her. And I said, is your sister happy in the wheelchair? Oh, absolutely. She's into wheelchair sports. She's doing this. She's doing that. I said, you don't want to speak to people like us. You know, because not that we're anti-wheelchairs, but we're pro below injury recovery. We are totally pro below injury recovery. So if you've got a really good life in a wheelchair and you're not fussed about standing up or doing anything, that's not a criticism of you. That's where you're at. So don't stress about that, you know. So we just, everyone has their own journey with this injury.
I think that's a really important point that you make, and that people should not measure success or failure by somebody else's, using somebody else as a benchmark, because as you say, we all have different karma. And I loved your very accepting attitude and the fact that determination is just an ingredient in the mix. But I think that people need to just look at what they can do for themselves and that work with what you have and not compare yourself to others, you know. So I think that's an important message, Kay.
Well, I think the thing is, too, that, you know,
we're at the end of the hour. Is there just one or two finishing statements you'd like to make?
Well, I said earlier I spent nearly $2 million, but in the beginning we just went to a normal gym, Josh used a normal personal trainer, and we just started to think of things logically. And we didn't push anything, but he trained, and it wasn't just about, in his case, above injury recovery was his neck. But we just used a normal gym initially. Now, obviously, there's a lot of awesome places like Below Injury Recovery, and as I said, Project Walk Atlanta, Project Walk Orlando, Project Walk Dallas, amazing, amazing places. And there's plenty of information on the net now. And, you know, it is a life sentence, but you can get recovery. So I guess that's how I want to finish it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for joining us today, Kay. And best wishes
no worries,
to you
thank
and
you.
To Josh.
Thank you very much.
So
thank
once
you.
Again,
Bye.
We come to... You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. Once again, we come to a
Bye.
Close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.